Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everyone. My name is Deb Karen. I am the host of Culture Crush RX, brought to you by Anahata Marketing. We explore what makes great company culture here on this show and discuss how business leaders can maximize their success by fostering happy, healthy, peak-performing teams and ensuring that everybody is aligned with the company mission. So today I have Brent Patmos in here with Perpetual Development. He's the CEO. What did we just... We just covered this. Founder, president. I can call
president,
you all of these
founder,
things.
Founder, CEO, whatever
yes,
you call it.
Exactly. So Brent and his team help leaders of privately held and family-owned businesses create and advance performance-driven cultures and growth smart strategies. I'm going to let you give us a little more information on that, Brent, but here's the little curveball I'm going to throw at you. Let's start with what was your very first job?
Oh, gosh. My very first job ever?
Uh-huh. What was the first thing that made you money?
I worked at McDonald's.
Okay.
And that was for a very short period of time because my mom actually owned a business. She owned a florist business.
Okay.
And she let me do that for about, I think, a couple of weeks and then said, well... If you can work for them and make money, you can work for me. So I started sweeping
floors. Did she still pay you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, started sweeping floors. So my first job, depending on how you look at it, was either at McDonald's or at the family business called Flower a Day Florist. So
interesting. Okay, well, that's a good segue because one of the things that we were talking about a little bit off air with Perpetual Development is that you focus on privately held and family-owned businesses, which is certainly unique compared to a lot of the folks that I've brought in and talked to on this show. So did that come from having worked in a family-owned business?
I think sometimes people expect to hear a grand answer. Like, yeah, from the time I worked with my mom, I knew I was going,
right?
No, of course not.
Not at all.
The way that progressed was that I only worked for privately held family-owned businesses as I really, from the time I worked with my mom to the time I had jobs in college to post-college, everybody I worked for was a privately held family-owned business. And after a while, I recognized, hey, there are some things that are needing to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't take the leap from point A to point B. So I just started writing those things down and started thinking about those things. And as things progressed, when we founded Perpetual Development, was with a clear understanding that we wanted to preserve the love, legacy, and leadership of family business, privately held companies because of everything they have invested in them.
I love that. That's amazing. How long have you been in business with Perpetual?
We are in our 19th year.
Oh, wow.
And next year, we will reach our 20th year in business.
Oh,
here.
Wow. Congratulations.
So, thank you very
much.
That's
awesome. That's very cool. So let's dive right into that. I'm fascinated by the concept of family-owned businesses. So when you're talking about the culture of a company, you've got one thing. When you're talking about the culture of a family, you've got something else. And now you're meshing them together. So what are some of those unique challenges to these family-owned businesses and how they run them?
If you think in terms of feeling and emotion, mm-hmm. there becomes your first dynamic. We all have feelings and emotions about our families. We all have feelings and emotions about our business or about our jobs. And normally we get to, in many cases, separate those, put mm-hmm. that between quotes. We get to separate those, but in a family-held or privately-owned business, many times we don't. And so the feeling and emotion that drives us personally is many times the carryover to the feeling and emotion that drives us professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, that drives us professionally is what we take home with us in terms of work coming to family. Many times that's mom and dad working in the family business. Many times that's brothers and sisters, cousins. It covers a broad range.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at how those two come to pass, if they don't purposefully or consciously work on keeping objectivity, not apart from emotion, but in concert with emotion mm-hmm. and feeling, it creates for a big emotional time bomb at some point in time. And that's really where it starts. We are human beings, which means we are thinking, feeling, rational or irrational people. And that's many times what creates the first dynamic of culture clash or culture alignment mm-hmm. between our personal lives and our professional lives.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I can see, I mean, I think almost anybody probably listening or any of us here in this room, we've experienced frustration at work with a coworker or, you know, some sort of relationship at work where you have kind of an internal filter because this person is simply a coworker. I think when you've got a family member, you know, a lot of times you may not hold back in some of those things that you're thinking, or you may not feel like you need to be as careful with, you know, your strong emotions. Or so what are your strategies for helping them, you know, embrace that? Because like you said, it's not trying to necessarily squash it, but how do you acknowledge it and then create a better system within that?
First of all, you raise a really good point, which is we definitively do express greater emotion, greater feeling with unrestricted filtering to people that are the closest to us. We know that, right? People will say, well, why'd you go home and yell at somebody that you love or care about? Because I couldn't yell or scream at the person that I work with, because there would be a reaction to my reaction.
Right.
And so that's definitive. And the first perspective is really to accept and understand who we are as individuals. And I don't mean in some cathartic or non-practical way. If we really gain a perspective of awareness, of understanding who we are, our strengths, our limitations, our approaches, our styles, and we first get comfortable in that approach, at least we know where we're coming from.
Right.
And that's, you know, kind of strategy point number one, increase your level of self-awareness. Because when you do that, you get the opportunity to really approach things with the knowledge of how you might go after a certain situation, or how you might need to control or contain yourself in a certain feeling or dynamic.
Right.
A second component is take the time to build an awareness and understanding of others in relationship to their approach, their style. Why? Because if I consider myself, but I don't consider anybody else, now I've got a very one-dimensional view. And in a practical way, our ability to put ourselves in somebody else's shoes in a practical sense to say, okay, I know me. Now, how do I understand them in response to this problem or in response to this challenge? And let me consider that. I'm taking a step that is purposeful to not just reacting, but to addressing whatever the problem or the challenge is that we're going to need to address.
Yeah.
And then third component is you've got to have an awareness or an understanding of your organizational goals or your family goals or the strategies that you're approaching or choosing to use in approaching your business. Because if we understand ourselves, if we understand somebody else, but then we don't understand how we uniquely align in roles to get to the outcome that we desire, it ends up being a lot of chaos. And it's a lot of wasted energy in a lot of different directions that are individually and emotionally directed that don't equal much output. And we want to harness all of that awareness in a very practical way to equal the insights for people that are necessary to allow them to make better choices and decisions in their leadership of a family business or a privately held company.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So, I mean, it does. Is your first step when you go into work with somebody, you've obviously got to look at their core values and look at their company mission. And like you said, see how that aligns. It would, I mean, I guess if I think initially, if you're in a family, like you probably already have some alignment there, but maybe not. You know, I mean, just because you all came from the same family doesn't mean those things necessarily all come up in the same way. So what's your first step when you go into work with a company? What do you look at first? Are they coming to you usually knowing that they have a problem? And is that usually what you tackle first, or where do you go with that at the beginning?
You raised several great points here. First,
I asked a lot of questions at once.
So what do we call that? The multiple port question.
Yeah.
So let's take that and break it down. First, I think you brought up, I'll start with a statement. You brought up a great point that said, hey, many times we think there is alignment. No, there's not.
Yeah.
That's an assumption that leads to a very bad outcome because we've not defined what alignment looks like. And so many times that's the source of movement or progression is getting people aligned on something simple that they may just not be able to bring themselves to alignment on because they're not seeing it. Or again, go back to our point about awareness. They're not understanding it or looking at it from the other person's view. So we sort of become locked in our own dynamic.
Yeah.
So then to your question about, you know, when do people come to us? It's very interesting. Most of our clients do not come to us at a point of problem. They come to us at a point of success. So in many cases, these are organizations that have primarily begun as an entrepreneurial endeavor, one person leading one idea or one person beginning a company based on an idea that evolved in advance. Now, that could be one family member literally, or it could be one or two members of the family. But there's an entrepreneurial spirit, most often tied to privately held family-owned businesses. And they grow and they advance and they grow and advance till one day they find themselves at a point where they look around and they go, hey, wait a minute. This isn't the same company, even though it's the same company. Mm-hmm. And I might want to consider some things differently than what I've considered them before. And by the way, my kids, who may or may not have been born at the time, are now at an age where they're thinking about potentially being a floor sweeper, mm-hmm. right? Or starting their job with us. And I've got to get much more serious about how I look at this in the construct of growth, advancement, development, et cetera. And so most of our clients come to us at that point of juncture, that critical point where they say, okay, this is really something that has gone beyond what I thought it would be, could be, or even imagined it to be. And now I've got to have systems and processes that aren't bureaucratic, that aren't unnecessarily corporate, but that really help advance our family and our business in alignment. And so to the next question that you asked, which is where do you start? You always start with assessment. Yeah. That is the core of everything. Assess every bit of what you possibly can so that you gain an understanding. And that literally is how we work. Assess, understand, and then to your point, start on the alignment. Where do we see differences? Where do we have discrepancies? Where do we have commonalities? Put all of that together in what we refer to as a culture map and be able to start helping the organization recognize the connects, things that they're doing well, the disconnects, things that they aren't doing well, and sort that all out both at the level of the company, the level of the family, the level of people who are not a part of the family but are a part of the family, and advance from there in what I'm going to call good, practical, pragmatic steps that make it very simple and clear for people to understand how they can continue to advance their culture, advance the performance of their organization, and achieve better outcomes.
That's good stuff. I love that they're coming to you, like you were saying, not at a time of crisis. They're forward thinking about it and more looking at how do we go forward positively rather than haphazardly.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, yeah. It doesn't mean that we won't and we haven't. It doesn't mean that we haven't or we won't take on a clients who come to us at a point of problem.
Of course.
But desperation is never a good space to be understanding things that are already challenging at the level of that emotion or at the level of that understanding. And so when that happens, we're sort of just increasing the energy.
Absolutely.
In a way that many times is likely not as constructive mm-hmm. as when we're increasing the energy based on great success, high levels of achievement and performance, and now just wanting to really use that moment or that space of opportunity to maximize their company even more. So we just get a lot more energy and maybe sometimes in the wrong way when things are starting at a point of problem.
Of course, that makes perfect sense. Are there particular industries that you prefer to work with or that you commonly work with?
We work a lot in manufacturing-based companies.
Okay.
Right? Various industries and not exclusively. So there's a tenant, a value that we have within the organization. We will not work with any company in a competing dynamic with one of our clients.
Okay.
So let's say, here in Phoenix, I work with a service provider, Southwest Truck Driver Training, an organization that trains over-the-road truck drivers and local carry truck drivers have been doing so, family-owned business. If somebody came to me tomorrow and said, hey, we are in the same business and we've heard you've done great things with Southwest, would you come to work with us? My answer, unequivocally, no. And we have always maintained that policy from the day I started, because we work from a dynamic of immersion. We are involved with those clients. We are involved with those families. We understand and have trust with them that is unconditional. We are intellectually honest. And those are the tenets. Those are our values of working with those clients. So we can work, families are families and businesses are businesses. We don't claim expertise initially in every business we work with. Mm-hmm. But we do claim expertise in working with the families that own those businesses. Gotcha. And so we can work across a diverse set of clients. We work in a, you know, in many manufacturing industries. We work or companies. We work within the service industries. We work within sales distribution companies. They have one thing in common. They are privately held or family owned.
Okay. So you really kind of become part of their family.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. We have attended, if I look, we have attended baptisms. We have attended weddings. We have attended bar mitzvahs. We have attended holiday parties. We have attended funerals. And that is because of the relationship and the intimacy that we possess. We have an expression that we exist to remove the subjective from those organizations in favor of the objective. And so while we are deeply involved and closely integrated with those organizations, we must, and always remind ourselves, remain objective in those relationships, because they don't want opinions. They want practical guidance to help them objectively achieve goals and outcomes and still love each other in the end.
Yeah.
And that's critical.
Yeah.
In families.
That makes sense. And I think it probably brings in a little bit of levity, right? And then you are a third party. You're removed from that in a way that that you're bringing in something where everybody can confide in you and trust in you, but then it's taking that charge off of it, that family charge, I guess, that sometimes
absolutely.
I don't think you can ever totally get rid of, right?
No, you can. And, you know, and you raise a very good point, which is about that level of trust. You know, I call it the greatest story never told. We understand confidentiality. We understand security. If we were to reference a security clearance, right, we would understand what that means. Someone has a level of confidentiality or of trust associated with a position or something of that nature. Well, when we think about our relationship with families, we refer to it as the greatest story never told. You will not find anything in any of the material that we represent that defines who our clients are. And that's because we don't want our clients' stories to be known to other people simply for the sake of trying to benefit the business in some distorted or inappropriate way. Families share their most intimate thoughts with us as their advisors. And those are the stories of sons and daughters who have grown up in the business who don't agree with their parents. Those are the stories of parents who are two generations removed from their kids who are being developed to take over the business, and they don't understand the views and values that their kids possess in many ways. And yes, they were all raised in the same home. And to your point earlier, two people can be raised in the same home and be completely different. Think about it in sibling relationships.
My sister and I are night and day.
And yeah, so you validate that perspective. Mm-hmm. And so you can't become casual with something that is so valued by people, their story, their legacy, their family, their business, simply to try and gain for some sort of self-interest, when the very thing that allows our business to advance is the level of trust, confidentiality, and confidence that our clients place in us. And that's why, you know, literally 99% of our business is by referral. One family to another family to another family.
That makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is the best way to get new business.
Agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. I mean, there's no better endorsement, really. And if you can get those referrals and not have to go out there and pound the sidewalk looking for new clients, that's an ideal place for you to be in your business, for sure. I tend to forget my questions when something else comes up that's interesting. So you mentioned, I think, in some of the material that was provided to me before you came on air about organizational authenticity. Can you touch on that a little bit and explain to me what that means to you?
Sure. So we have a choice organizationally. We have a choice as people, but we have a choice organizationally. We can either exist in alignment or we can exist in contradiction. And a culture that exists in alignment is a culture that is destined to achieve great things. A culture that exists in contradiction is a company that is destined for more chaos than they probably care to deal with. I refer to it as culture as a kaleidoscope. Mm-hmm. And a kaleidoscope is a variety of pieces, fractured, broken in many ways, that come together at the spin of a wheel or the spin of a sphere to create this beautiful picture. And companies, cultures are just like that. You're taking the nuances and the pieces and parts of people, and you're taking all of their views and all of their values, sometimes aligned, sometimes not aligned, even when they're part of the same family, and you're bringing them together to produce something that is this beautiful picture, this sort of weave of a family business. And when you start to look at individuals that exist in contradiction, leaders in particular, it's most often because they begin to put their agenda ahead of the company's agenda. And when I say agenda, we can, you know, harp on the word, or we can accept it for what it is. The company has to win.
Yeah.
If the company doesn't win, the culture of the company doesn't win, there is no company, there are no jobs.
Absolutely.
And so when we work with companies, we are very much in that awareness cycle about understanding what is the mission, what is the purpose, what is the value.
Yeah, what are we all here for?
Of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, let's all get aligned around that, not just for the sake of drinking the Kool-Aid, but for understanding that we can't have contradictions. If we're going in one direction and we have a leader in the company, you know, let's say that one of our tenets is we want to connect with our customers, or we want to engage with our people. And you have a leader who is deliberately, of their own style, their own approach, not connecting and really not engaging. They become a counter effect to successful culture. And so if we don't work in that direction, we find ourselves in a big problem. The company finds themselves in a big problem. And so, you know, you have to really move from what I call corporate correctness to corporate connectedness in order to advance a culture in an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be willing to call out the contradictions when you see them in a constructive manner that is development focused. And many times that is the role we find ourselves in.
Yeah.
Is identifying those contradictions so that we can create that connectedness that we're talking about and working towards.
I love the kaleidoscope metaphor. It's beautiful. That kind of made it click for me. And I think that stuff is, I mean, I'm a yoga teacher on the side too, so this like drops right into my, like, this like all of life. That was like life wisdom right there.
Totally. I mean, you know, and I think the perspective is when you come to a space, you know, when you talk about that kaleidoscope, when you come to a space that you can understand that not as abstract, but understand it as completely practical.
Yeah.
And understand how it takes every single person, if they're aligned to the performance, if they're aligned to the understanding, bad performance is bad performance, can't be tolerated, needs to be dealt with, I got it. But for the people that come to work every day and say, look, I want to do my part to be a part of something that creates this tapestry, this visual of a successful organization, and you really engage people around that perspective and talk about how their strengths and how their limitations at a level of awareness and understanding allow them to actually catapult themselves forward, you're addressing a space that most people look and go, well, how do you make that practical? Well, you make that practical because you apply that to the construct of business. You make sure that you bring awareness to people, that you eliminate those contradictions, that you're able to build on that picture and let people experience what happens when that occurs.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic outcome in a completely practical sense.
We all want to feel like we have meaning.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what that boils down to, is if
you
can tap into what, you know, when you're showing up every day, what are you contributing? We all have a need for contribution. So
right.
I think if you can tap into that and get everybody, you know, like you said, you're working toward the same goal ultimately. And if you're not, then this is where you guys can help. But
right, absolutely.
Yeah. So do you have some companies that, I'm sure, I know the answer is going to be yes. In 20 years, you've seen some companies handed down to the next generation. And do you sometimes see that there might be some shifts in their culture? And you know, society as a whole, we're always evolving in our culture. Companies have to do the same. Usually, I would think if they're doing it from an open mind and from these spaces that you're talking about, it's going to be to their benefit. But do you have some folks that you've actually seen these transitions and seen how it's changed from generation to generation?
Yes. And I say that reflectively only because we have had the good fortune, again, under the category of, did you see this happening this way? Our average tenure of a client is 5+ years. Our clients continue to expand their business and we continue to build our business in their expansion. It's a natural relationship, and we've established that trust and that confidence to be able to do that. when you start to have that kind of longevity with people and you see, let's say, in this case, it would be a third generation owner who is in their 70s, who I have worked with for the better part of 18 years, and then a son or a daughter who are in their mid to late 20s, and you recognize that they see time as finite, not infinite, there is a deliberateness and a purposefulness with which you have to work, because you recognize that the viability of that company is based on the culture that has been passed from generation one to generation two to generation three, and now to generation four. Really, there's 40 plus years between those two generations. And even though they are father and son or father and daughter, we are helping them bridge those transitions. And the way that we do that is by establishing some ground rules regarding cultural shifts. And we refer to those as fixed cultural items and variable cultural items.
Okay.
And we may change the word items, but fixed and variable are the constants. So in a fixed cultural dynamic, those aren't things that can be changed. And everybody agrees.
What would be examples of something that would be a fixed cultural dynamic?
So let's say that how someone is going to do business in terms of a value statement. They will always do business ethically and fairly. Okay. And they take actions to make sure that occurs. Those are fixed. That's a fixed culture item. Okay. We will not compromise our ethic for the sake of profitability. We have to be profitable, but we are not going to do that. Let's say that somebody, we have a client who says every year they're going to donate 10% of their profits to some charitable organization. That has been the way it is through three generations of that family business. They treat that as a fixed cultural item. Dynamic. They're not going to stop giving 10%. Even when they have had financial downturns, 10% of their profits have gone to those charitable causes and contributions. Variable culture, on the other side, are things that are important, but not essential to preserving the culture of the business. Let's say that somebody wants to change a dress code. Okay. That may have been preferred in one generation to be one way, preferred in this generation to be another way, and that does not become the cornerstone of our disagreement. That becomes the thing that we say, that's variable. That's okay. Yeah. We can change that and not impact the culture of our company. One that I think is kind of what I call fixed, it's fixed and people like to make it variable. You'll hear all the time, leaders, owners of companies say people are our most important asset. And the difference between the expression and the action is watching what the company does to define how they live that out. And that is a fixed cultural item for our clients. If you said, Brent, what's the thing that is common to every client that you have? It is the value that they place in the people who make their business successful. They do not report to shareholders. They do not report quarterly earnings. They take the long view, and those individuals are valued at a different level. Is this about perfection? No, because nobody or no company is perfect. We're not delusional, but they do look at those people differently, and they don't set up contradictions that go against that dynamic. So that becomes a fixed culture. But on the variable side of that, let's say that we're not engaging a particular generation the way that a generation needs to be connected. And the next generation of leadership in that family says, hey, the way that we did it is not the way that it needs to be done to appeal to this next generation.
Right.
And by the way, we shouldn't become consumed with only that being only millennials or it's any generation. We see some changes that need to take place to better connect or engage with our workforce. Hey, great. Let's make that change. That's a variable cultural item. Let's do that. And so that relationship between fixed and variable is really how we manage cultural dynamic within our culture map and within the process of working with those clients.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think generation to generation, those things have to change. I mean, even me work mostly, you said, or a lot in manufacturing, mm-hmm. but as technology changes, even manufacturing for sure, that it changes how people communicate. And that's something generationally that we tend to see, just because I think a lot of times you have people that have get in that, well, this is how we've always done it kind of mentality.
You're totally right.
And then you get younger people coming up and saying, well, now we're going to do it differently, or we have a different approach now. And so embracing that, bridging that, that's, I'm sure, a challenge, but I think that's something that having somebody to come in and help you would really be beneficial.
You give great context here, Deb, in the sense that when you take a younger generation and you take an older generation, both have views that are valued. Both have perspectives. Go to our point of talking about awareness earlier.
Yeah.
If I look at one is wrong and one is right, we get nowhere. If I, and I, we always refer to it as, it's not either or, it's and.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at one and say, okay, what's the value of the perspective that I gain? Okay, what's the value of the other that I gain in that perspective? Now we're beginning to appreciate and understand the contribution that both generations will make in the business. And we're not so consumed with, you know, fist butting.
Somebody winning and somebody losing.
Yeah. Totally correct. And it sounds a bit idealistic, I know. But when you're talking, if you were talking about big bureaucratic corporate company, I get why that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But in a privately held family owned business, this is the lifeblood. Continuity, legacy, the preservation of that within their business is how their business was built. That's what they want to see continue. They don't want to just ditch that. So what we see that you raise such important context to is those generations that are coming up many times today, we are facilitating them being assigned to integration of new ideas into the company, innovation related to different technologies, different approaches. Because when you give roles to people generationally, valuing what they're all capable and good at, you dissipate a lot of the tension that comes to play generationally when it's an either or a, I don't like your idea. Well, I don't like your idea. Define roles.
Right.
Give people the opportunity to maximize what they're good at. And so when you say, hey, Brent, I imagine a lot of these younger generations are really helping companies with innovation, you're spot on. And that's how you can maximize a cultural shift.
Yeah. So when you're dealing with families, and do they ever come to you with their home problems? And do you like have to coach them on, okay, now it's 6 o'clock and we're not the boss and we're not the, you know, whatever our title is. Now we are father and son, or whatever that relationship is. Do you help them with those strategies to keep it peaceful at home as well?
I should probably give a disclaimer, right? Yeah. My degree is in business, not in psychology. However, business and psychology oftentimes find themselves strange bedfellows. And yes, is the answer to that question. Do we inherently seek out to understand personal problems or personal situations? No.
They're going to get carried in, though.
Yeah, totally, because it's family.
Yeah.
Okay, and I mean, we don't work from delusion here. I work with my wife.
My next question was going to be, does anybody from your family work in
business? My daughter works with our company. My wife works with our company. My daughter-in-law has worked with our company. Our future daughter-in-law has worked with our company. And so the answer is yes. And I can speak firsthand that as an owner, there are times where my wife has gone home before I have from the office. We create unique separation in that space. And I will come home still ready to talk about the business of business. And she's ready to talk about a glass of wine and dinner.
Yeah.
And I have to manage that dynamic. The same way when families are in the midst of so many dimensions of their relationship, and they're saying, well, you know, last night after we left work, dad started in on me on X. Or, you know, mom and dad are talking to me about my decisions involving Y. They didn't inherently mean for that to cross into a personal space, but we can't be delusional enough to think that we get to isolate or compartmentalize work is work, family is family. Not the case. This is the business of family business.
Yeah.
And that means the business of family and the business of business.
Mm-hmm.
And they always mesh and merge. And our ability to understand and value that, respect it, and I think also recognize that if there are true clinical dynamics that come into play, which we have seen in families, that we engage professionals at that level who are trained and capable of moving beyond the business scope to truly address the family function or dysfunction scope, and we help that family and that business in totality, not just in one dimension.
Yeah, because they are tied together.
Totally.
I think adds to your trust and credibility. I'm sure that you do have the experience of working with your own family. So when you're talking to your clients, you're like, yeah, I know. My wife drives me crazy at work sometimes too. I'm sure that happens. But I want to kind of touch on that. What, you know, can you share some of your specific strategies for how you guys do manage that? Where, you know, you said you have, you touched on, you have some routines in place or there's something that you do, but keeping that so that you still have that relationship time and it doesn't always, one doesn't always interfere with the other. Cause I think it's important for the health of both of those situations.
Personally?
Yeah.
So I will tell you that really the source of some of those tips and techniques, if I'm candid, has been really much more my wife than me. I think owners find themselves consumed. Mm-hmm. There is not a minute of the day that I could not talk about, deal with, or work on the business of our business, because you find a unique place in life where you're aligned with what you do and what you do is aligned with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you are flat on the gas pedal all the time because you love what you're doing. So
that's everybody's dream, is it not? Yeah,
no, I totally get that. And I get the opportunity. I mean, I am truly blessed to get that opportunity to live that way and have, you know, certainly I don't think that way over the last 19 years in total, but for the last 10 to 11 years, it is just a really sweet spot because we're getting to fulfill everything that we were intended to do.
Yeah.
And I always say that when you come to that point, you know that you are completely unfiltered, not because you're trying to represent the most radical idea in the room, but because everything that is coming from your head to your mouth is reflective of what is in the best interest of the organization and the family you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife is a great tip provider to me about ways to keep relationships at home healthy while still allowing me to focus on the business. So a couple of things practically. Cell phones are an essential part of my business. She just said to me this morning before I left, call me whenever you can today, because I had said to her, hey, give me a call at some point in time today. Let me know how your day at the office was and when you're done. And she said, I've seen your schedule. There's no way that I'm going to call you. You're on the phone 24/7. You're doing your interview with Deb today. You call me when you're able to call me. Well, if I don't have a strategy for departing from that cell phone, that's going to carry over to dinner time, glass of wine, whatever the case may be. So when I get home now, her suggestion several years ago was leave the cell phone in the truck for, yes, I drive a truck. Leave a cell phone, the cell phone in the truck for at least an hour when you come home. That way you're not distracted by it. I have passed that tip on to many of our clients who struggle with the same dynamic. We also establish what I'm going to call conversation zones. There are times we can talk about work and times we can't talk about work. And again, I'm going to emphasize most of these tips have come from my wife to me, not in reverse. She's far better at recognizing and valuing that than sometimes I am. So those conversation zones are spaces where we can talk about the things that she does in her role, the things that I need her to do in her role, things she needs me to do in my role to support her. Because in that way, it is really about two people working in their roles within the company.
Mm-hmm.
So those conversation zones set up the space for us to know when that's okay and when that's not okay. We have a no technology. This has been a really hard one. A no technology after 8 o'clock sort of rule, okay? It doesn't mean that we don't utilize our computers or I can't send an email, but after 8 o'clock, if we have not really taken quality time, she has set a space for us to be able to, if it's something as simple as taking a walk, playing a game, sitting down and talking about the kids, of which we have four, all of whom are adults with their own unique dynamics, she sets that space for us. Will I claim perfection in that? Nope. I'm kind of a flawed person sometimes that way.
We all are.
But does it really set up a stage for me to be far more conscious of exactly what you're talking about, the balance between the two? Yes, it does. And then there are times where I get what I call the absolute lay down. And that's a strategy that says, I need your attention. I need your time. and I need to be the most important thing to you right now, and I am telling you that. And that's most often if I don't recognize it or if I'm not aware of it. And when that happens, that exists as what we call the lay down, because the rule that we do have is she is my wife first and a part of the business second. Mm-hmm. So that role has to take precedence. And I always tell her, I will fire you if it means that our relationship is not being maintained well, because I value you more as my wife than a part of the company. And that's kind of the other part that we always agree to.
It's awesome. How long have you guys been married?
We have been married coming up on 10 years.
Oh, wow. So, okay. Yeah. Have Second you always marriage. Worked together?
No. Well, yes. Yeah. I mean, in the entire time that we've been married?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So I don't know if you, do you listen to any other podcasts? Are you, I'm a podcast freak. I don't know if you're familiar with Tom Bilyeu, The Impact Theory.
I am not.
I believe his company, I mix him up sometimes with another guy that I'm totally geeking out about, but I believe he's the founder of Quest. Okay. Quest Nutrition, you know, they're
some, absolutely.
So they have a fantastic, he has a fantastic business podcast called Impact Theory. His wife is part of the business as well. And they've been married for 20 years or something like that. And so she works in the business, but I don't know the frequency of it, but every so often they do impact. I mean, our relationship theory episodes, they talk a lot about these strategies. You nailed a lot of what they've talked about and the experiences that they've had. And that same thing is, when you have that kind of relationship with, you know, a marriage and a business, you have to delineate that. And it's interesting that in their dynamic, it's often the wife too, that is like, okay, now you're shutting it off and you know, I need some time. And the same thing, it's understanding each pair, each partner. And you know, you've created those strategies where you can each say, hey, my needs aren't getting met right now. Mm-hmm. And then it keeps it in balance. I think that's amazing. I think that, you know, and that's probably something that I would imagine you sometimes share with your business owners. I mean, the having those healthy relationships at home, whether or not you're in business together, helps you do better in everything else that you do.
There's a great part about transparency. Mm-hmm. Go back to the perspective of the kaleidoscope. Kaleidoscopes are unique. They exist in sort of their own dynamic in the sense that they are both transparent and non-transparent. I find that's very much the relationship with families and companies, families and their relationships in this sense. Transparency is a wonderful thing. Authenticity is a wonderful thing when you can come to that moment of absolute candor and honesty about a situation. And there is not a day or a time where I have not learned something relationally, personally, or professionally from our clients at the same time that we're helping them understand a concept or an idea.
Yeah.
And it is a uniquely bizarre set of situations sometimes where you'll be sharing with them something and then they're sharing something with you. It's no longer about who's in the advisor role. It's really about how we're maximizing this relationship together and how, again, we're taking and we're putting all of these parts and pieces together to form, in this case, a picture that is connected to the business, but related more to two individuals. Mm-hmm. And we learn from them as much as we hope they learn from us about the business of family business. And so it's just a really cool space to be in when you have those moments like you're defining.
Yeah. It's very cool. I'm this conversation is amazing. So if you could touch on, you know, what do you think are the common traits among companies that really do have great cultures? Are there a few key things that you say would identify? I mean, I think communication clearly, as we've touched on, is part of it. What else do you think is in there?
So we're going to start with a level of commitment. Mm. And that is almost, I would say, at every single level of the organization. When you consider that no individual, no organization is perfect, we work to create ideal. Ideal people, ideal candidates, ideal companies, not perfect. The commitment that that takes on the part of people to put development ahead of some other facet of their business, recognizing what that means in long-term outcomes compared to short-term gains, mm-hmm. is huge. So I'm going to put commitment at the top, because if that owner, if that leader within that family business or privately held company does not provide that commitment, there's a lot of things that become variable and you're not going to maximize the culture the way you're defining. Second thing, people are valued. And I don't mean just because that's a nice marketing approach. People are valued and they are a part of the organization in a way that is uniquely intimate. I have seen owners of companies who have had their employees, and this is in a company that has thousands of people in the company. One person has, let's say, recently had their home burned down. And that company, that owner stepped in to make sure that that person was not without while their house was rebuilt, their insurance was being processed, etc. If you look at a situation where there was a tragedy in a family, someone had died, someone had passed away, and the family didn't know economically how they were going to be able to get there. And the owner or one of the senior leaders stepped in and said, we're going to cover that cost for you. Those kind of engagements, those kind of decisions about people really place people in a different space within those organizations. And those people return tenfold to that company.
Yeah. Well, and that shows all the other employees too. It's not just the person that you helped. Everybody benefits from seeing that that's how the company treats somebody.
Clearly. And I think the part that becomes really important to that is that your longevity, your service length of those employees is far greater than what you're going to find in, you know, I won't generalize, but in other environments, whether we call those publicly traded or other, the longevity of these individuals, you're talking length of service that is two times, three times, four times industry standard.
Yeah.
They're not having to deal with things the way other organizations are. So
it goes back to the connectedness and contribution you're making those people feel like they are literally part of the family, even though they may not be blood relatives.
Yeah. No, totally.
Yeah.
And I think then the third component that I would highlight is a willingness to always change.
Yeah.
These organizations are always willing to evolve because they recognize that if they become stagnant, they're going to limit the capacity of growth to the next generation of the business. And their objective is really to minimize the risk and maximize the opportunity that the next generation has. And if they aren't willing to confront change, no matter how comfortable the business has been, no matter how comfortable they may even be in the lifestyle that the business has provided, many of these owners have foregone what I'm going to call absolute comfort for the perspective of changing their company to know that it would continue into the next generation or into decades forward, because they know that that is the livelihood of so many people connected to that company. And so change, the ability to change, evolve, adapt is one of the factors. So those are three things that I would identify as uniquely different in the kind of companies that we work with, privately held, family owned.
Yeah, I love that. This is really good stuff. So let's touch on where people could find you. Are you currently seeking new clients? If somebody's fascinated and wants to work with you?
We're always seeking new clients.
Yes.
Here's the great part about what we do. It has to be right for the client. It has to be right for us. We are not seeking clients for the sake of seeking clients. We're seeking alignment with people who want to advance the love, legacy, and leadership. And strange to have that word in front, but remember, we deal with families,
right?
Who want to preserve the love, legacy, and leadership of their family business. And that is not always small business.
Right.
That is family-owned business. And they are all shapes, all sizes. And there is, you know, we go through a fairly extensive assessment phase between our potential clients and ourselves, all the people that we utilize to deliver services, et cetera. We all have to know that there is an understanding of alignment with that company in order to achieve the kind of outcomes and success that we want to help them achieve. And there are times we have had to say, our best resource would be to refer you to somebody else because we are not the best company for you in this case. So we are always seeking great relationships that equal great outcomes with great clients, just not, you know, in what I call mass method.
Yes.
It's a very specific and refined approach.
Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with that. I do that in my own PR and marketing business too. I specifically want to work with certain types of people, and that's where I'll do my best work. So I'm with you on that one. So it's perpetualdevelopment.com.
It is
your website.
Absolutely.
And you're on LinkedIn, I believe.
Absolutely. I mean, on all of the social channels, on LinkedIn, somebody can find me under Brent Patmos, or they can find me under Perpetual Development. On Twitter, they can find me under Brent Patmos. On Instagram, you'll find me under Perpetual Development. So there is no space that you would not, and we write a weekly.
I was just going to say, you have a great blog. I've read quite a few of your posts.
Yeah, I write a weekly weekly blog called Thought Wave, and it's really designed to challenge people to think beyond the boundaries of where they're at currently.
Yeah, and it's good stuff. I must follow you on LinkedIn then, because I see them often.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, it's definitely so. If nothing else, anybody listening, go and check out Thought Wave. There is some really valuable information on there. So anything else you want to share? Do you have events or anything coming up that you want to plug?
We have probably one of the most exciting things coming up January 11th. I'll have the opportunity to speak here in Phoenix at the Evolution of Excellence Conference up at the JW Marriott Desert Ridge.
Oh, cool.
The great part about that is it's open to the public. All they have to do is register. They can do that by going to www.ttisicon. That's ttisicon.com. And we have an entire day of what I'm going to refer to as world-class speakers. But these are not speakers. These are world-class business people who are going to connect a story from start to finish. And no surprise, you'll hear me in the story of Culture as a Kaleidoscope. And very cool. What that means in even greater detail to organizations and to their future success in terms of creating that tapestry that is unique for their company. So anybody that would be interested in attending, we have Franz Johansson coming in, Ron Price, myself. We've got a lineup of people that are recognized throughout a variety of industries who will give us an opportunity to really speak to what it means to the evolution of excellence.
That's awesome. That's January 11th.
January 11th.
Okay. I'll make sure we get that included when we publish our podcast version of this, so people will have that link in there. Okay. Well, if anybody would like to get in touch with you, they can look you up. We've given all of your contact information. Do you want to give an email address? Do you want to just go to perpetualdevelopment.com if they're looking to reach out?
They are welcome to. They can always send an email to family@perpetualdevelopment.com. That will always be a resource that if they had a question or if they wanted to connect, that's a way to do that. And that's family@perpetualdevelopment.com.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much, Brent. It's been great chatting with you. Thank you, listeners, for joining us for Culture Crush RX. I'm your host, Deb Karen, with Anahata Marketing. We're very proud to be part of the Phoenix Business Radio X community. We're hitting your airwaves in partnership with MaxSex and Conscious Capitalism of Arizona. And as always, I hope that you've taken away some excellent tidbits that you can help you build a better performing, more fulfilled team. Until next time.